Did you know the benefits of nature's most powerful superfood are universal and always available no matter what your age? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a nutritional supplement I recommend and use that's clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens and fight infection, and cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. It's Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. With Sovereign's proprietary enhanced delivery system, Colostrum LD is the most effective colostrum available. Colostrum LD has wide-ranging health benefits at every stage of life. To order, just go to SovereignLaboratories.com. That's SovereignLaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to SovereignLaboratories.com for Colostrum LD.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In. Here on Intelligent Medicine, thank you for joining me today. The destination for questions is radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I want to talk to you about something very, very important. Well, I hope all of these topics are important. And this one too. And it's about the prevalence, the incidence of anxiety and depression in our country and hence around the world. There are many reasons for it. And I found a wonderful editorial in the Journal of Psychiatry and Neuroscience. And this is written by Dr. Simon Young, PhD, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Psychiatry and Neuroscience, Department of Psychiatry, McGill University, Montreal, Quebec. We know that there are a lot of prescription antidepressants being written for, at least a couple of decades. And the primary purpose of his editorial is to point out that pharmacologic strategies are not the only ones worthy of study when devising strategies to increase brain serotonin. The effect of non-pharmacologic interventions on brain serotonin and the implications of increased serotonin for mood and behavior need to be studied more. The amount of money and effort put into research on drugs that alter serotonin is very much greater than that put into non-pharmacologic methods. The magnitude of the discrepancy is probably neither in tune with the wishes of the public nor optimal for progress in the prevention and treatment of mental disorders. Well, on that note, let me give you a little rundown on side effects of your antidepressant. Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Effexor, Cymbalta, all of the above. A great big side effect is insomnia. Well, here's what happens. Antidepressants are actually SSRIs. SSRI is the acronym for Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitor. What this means is, between nerve cells, there's a gap. It's called the synapse. Serotonin kind of runs through there in its travels from nerve cell to nerve cell. These selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, antidepressants, cause serotonin to remain in the synapse, to remain in this gap, giving the brain the impression that everything is fine, there's plenty of serotonin here, and serotonin is the neurotransmitter responsible for good mood, everything is right with the world, confidence, all of that kind of thing. So there's plenty of serotonin here, not to worry. However, in a properly functioning brain, that serotonin is meant to travel from neuron to neuron. It's a chemical messenger, a neurotransmitter, right? It's meant to travel between the nerve cells and eventually become melatonin. We need melatonin for sleep. That's why those taking antidepressants may have trouble sleeping as a big side effect, because that serotonin is told to remain in that synapse. It's not being uptaked into the next nerve cell. And when that is forced to happen via your antidepressant, that serotonin can't behave as it normally does and go on to become melatonin. That's why then you're low in melatonin and you can't sleep. That's how it works. Did you know that those taking antidepressants also have an increased risk of osteoporosis and breast cancer? Now, consider this. More and more menopausal, premenopausal, postmenopausal women are being prescribed antidepressants to deal with their hormonal fluctuations or anything else that might be going on. Let's blame our pesky hormones. So imagine that. That's also upping the risk factor. So, other ways to help increase serotonin. But let me give you just a little background from Dr. Young, who does a beautiful job in this article. For the last four or so decades, the question of how to manipulate the serotonergic system with drugs has been an important area of research in biological psychiatry. And this research has led to advances in the treatment of depression. Research on the association between various polymorphisms, what you know as gene mutations, these are polymorphisms, and depression, supports the idea that serotonin plays a role not only in the treatment of depression, but also in susceptibility to depression and suicide. The research focus here has been on those gene mutations, aka polymorphisms, of the serotonin transporter. But other serotonin related genes may also be involved. In the future, genetic research will make it possible to predict with increasing accuracy who exactly is susceptible to depression. So, another reason for pursuing non-pharmacologic methods of increasing serotonin arises from the increasing recognition that happiness and well-being are important, both as factors protecting against mental and physical disorders and in their own right. Conversely, negative moods are associated with negative outcomes. That stands to reason, right? For example, the negative mood hostility is a risk factor for many disorders. For the sake of brevity, hostility is discussed here mainly in relation to one of the biggest sources of mortality, coronary heart disease. A meta-analysis of 45 studies demonstrated that hostility is a risk factor for coronary heart disease and for all-cause mortality. And more recent research confirms this. Hostility is associated not only with the development of coronary heart disease, but also with poorer survival in coronary artery disease patients. Hostility may lead to decreased social support and social isolation, and low perceived social support is associated with greater mortality in those with coronary artery disease. Effects are not just limited to coronary heart disease. For example, the opposite of hostility, which is agreeableness, was a significant protective factor against mortality in a sample of older, frail participants. The Constitution of the World Health Organization states, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmary. This may sound exaggerated, but positive mood within the normal range is an important predictor of health and longevity. In a classic study, those in the lowest quartile for positive emotions, rated from autobiographies written at a mean age of 22 years, died on average 10 years earlier than those in the highest quartile. Even taking into account possible confounders, other studies found the same solid link between feeling good and living longer. In a series of recent studies, negative emotions were associated with increased disability due to mental and physical disorders, increased incidence of depression, increased suicide, increased mortality, up to 2 decades later. Positive emotions protected against these outcomes. A recent review, including meta-analyses, experimental studies, concluded that happiness is associated with and precedes numerous successful outcomes. Mood may influence social behavior, and social support is one of the most studied psychosocial factors in relation to health and disease. Low social support is associated with higher levels of stress, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and with increased morbidity and mortality from a host of medical illnesses. Research confirms what might be intuitively expected, that positive emotions and agreeableness foster congenial relationships with others. This in turn will create the conditions for an increase in social support. So, non-pharmacologic methods of raising brain serotonin may not only improve mood and social functioning of healthy people, a worthwhile objective, even without additional considerations, would also make it possible to test the idea that increases in brain serotonin may help protect against the onset of various mental and physical disorders. There are 4 strategies here that Dr. Simon Young, PhD, writes about that are worth further investigation. A study by Perro, Link, and colleagues provides an initial lead about one possible strategy for raising brain serotonin. And they used PET scans and they obtained measures of serotonin synthesis in the brains of healthy people and all of that. And this study is the first to report that self-induced changes in mood can influence serotonin synthesis. Reported levels of happiness were positively correlated, and reported levels of sadness were negatively correlated with serotonin synthesis in the right anterior cingulate cortex, a part of the brain responsible for that. So it's the first report that self-induced changes in mood can actually influence the production of serotonin. This raises the possibility that the interaction between serotonin synthesis and mood may be two-way, with serotonin influencing mood and mood influencing serotonin. Talk about a synergy. Exposure to bright light is a second possible approach to increasing serotonin. And this is interesting because, you know, you've heard of seasonal affective disorder. Sad, right? When it's darker in the winter months, when we don't have enough light, people can become sad. Exposure to bright light is a possible second approach to increasing it without serotonin, without drugs. Bright light is, of course, a standard treatment for seasonal depression. But a few studies also suggest it's an effective treatment for non-seasonal depression and also reduces depressed mood in women with premenstrual dysphoric disorder and in pregnant women suffering depression. So this is all very, very interesting. It has to do with our circadian rhythms, the light-dark cycle. That's why I say it's important to go to bed at night at the same time, wake up in the morning at the same time, most days of the week. So I'm giving you Saturday off. I'm trying to be reasonable here. This is all a negotiation. But when we do get up in the morning, we need to open the blinds, open the curtains, get some sun on our face, go outside. Even in the winter when it's cold out, get some sunlight on you. Helps to reduce your cortisol too. And when it's dark, start dimming the lights indoors. Start getting ready for bed. So, and Dr. Young makes some nice, he points out some important considerations here. He says, relatively few generations ago, most of the world population was involved in agriculture and was outdoors much of the day. This would have resulted in high levels of bright light exposure, even in the winter. Even on a cloudy day, the light outside can be greater than 1,000 lux, L-U-X, a level never normally achieved indoors. So, in a recent study carried out at a particular latitude, daily exposure to light greater than 1,000 lux averaged about 30 minutes in winter and only about 90 minutes in summer among people working at least 30 hours weekly. Weekends were included. In this group, summer bright light exposure was probably considerably less than the winter exposure of our agricultural ancestors. We may be living in a bright light deprived society. A third strategy that may raise brain serotonin is exercise. And we know this. May exercise be your antidepressant? And of course, I'm a nutritionist. I'm going to get to food last as the fourth one. But let me get to exercise here. A third strategy that may raise brain serotonin is exercise. A comprehensive review of the relation between exercise and mood concluded that antidepressant and anti-anxiolytic effects have been clearly demonstrated. In the United Kingdom, the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, which works on behalf of the National Health Service and makes recommendations on treatments according to the best available evidence, has published a guide on the treatment of depression. The guide recommends treating mild clinical depression with various strategies, including exercise rather than antidepressants, because the risk-benefit ratio is poor for antidepressant use in patients with mild depression. Well, there you go. Interesting, right? And now, as with exposure to bright light, there has been a large change in the level of vigorous physical exercise experience since humans were hunter-gatherers or engaged primarily in agriculture. Scientists argue that the decline in vigorous physical exercise, and in particular, in effort-based rewards, may contribute to the high level of depression in today's society. The effect of exercise on serotonin suggests that the exercise itself, not the rewards that stem from exercise, may be important. If trials of exercise to prevent depression are successful, then prevention of depression can be added to the numerous other benefits of exercise. Hey, not to mention those beautiful endorphins. That runner's high is a high for a reason. And now the fourth factor. The fourth factor that could play a role in raising brain serotonin is diet. Hooray! According to some evidence, tryptophan, which increases brain serotonin in humans, as in experimental animals, is an effective antidepressant in mild to moderate depression. Tryptophan, or L-tryptophan, is an essential amino acid found in foods, meat, chicken, less so in almonds and plant foods. Further, in healthy people with high trait irritability, it increases agreeableness, decreases quarrelsomeness, and improves mood. Who wouldn't like that for some of your friends or family members? However, whether tryptophan should be considered primary as a drug or a dietary component is a matter of some dispute. In the United States, it's classified as a dietary component, but Canada and some European countries classify it as a drug. I like tryptophan. I've told some people to take tryptophan in an effort to treat their depression, to treat their sleep, or to treat their moodiness more than anything. Now, would you prescribe tryptophan to somebody taking an antidepressant, taking an SSRI? No. Tryptophan is the precursor to serotonin. When somebody's already on an antidepressant, if you give them tryptophan, it may cause serotonin syndrome. Too much serotonin has the same effect as too little serotonin. It doesn't feel good. That's not a good thing. So you want to be careful. I'm talking to practitioners out there. Again, serotonin is an essential amino acid. It's found in our animal foods mostly. You get about 400 to 500 milligrams in a chicken breast, in a burger, in some scrambled eggs. Less so in almonds and plant foods. So, because tryptophan is a precursor for serotonin, it's very, very important in helping to raise serotonin levels. And of course, what else can drive down your serotonin? Stress, a poor diet, all of that. You've heard me talk about those already. So I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.